in a world where one man brings you an inspiring, powerful podcast to help you elevate your state of health, energy, and overall life performance. Welcome to the Elevate Your State Show with your host and fellow health hacker, TJ Anderson.
Welcome back, my friends. This is your friend and fellow health hacker, TJ Anderson, your host on the Elevate Your State Show, this podcast, which we'll have in video form as well. If you want to get all the show notes, you can check them out at elevateyourstate.co. But if you're watching the video, I got my next guest sitting right next to me. We're literally elevating our state up in the mountains at my home, at our home here in Boulder, Colorado. Dog is on the porch barking a little bit, but this is a very special episode because I have a dear friend joining me, Benjamin Stewart. Ben, thank you for joining the show today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, man. It's awesome to be able to align our schedules, me being back in town and chill a little bit, 100%. Get this podcast going.
I know. We've been talking about this for a little while.
We have, yeah.
Yes, well, we've both just, you in particular, which we're going to break down for all of our listeners today, you've just been up to some just like fascinating and wild and powerful projects in your life over the years and recently the last few years specifically in your work. So we know you're a filmmaker. You've had lots of experience in documentaries. So I want to understand, like, you know, what was, before we get into how you got into documentaries, like, what was your, like, some of your favorite movies growing up? Or did you have any favorite movies growing up?
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, growing up, I was really into The Lost Boys, The Crow, Fight Club, obviously, like, getting up there in years. Like, so, like, film-wise, right. I've always been super into really deep psychological twist-ending films. And as far as documentaries, to be honest, I wasn't a big documentary buff. And I guess this is a pretty interesting story. What got me to be a filmmaker was I was told by somebody to watch this one documentary online. And I looked at the cover of it and I was like, you know what, I'll do that tonight when I drop acid. So I dropped acid that night, and I watched this film called Zeitgeist. And it was this conspiracy documentary that was done back in 2007. And the combination of those two things, like the psychedelic opening up suggestibility and everything like that. And the amazing thing about that film that I thought was just the thing that turned me into a filmmaker was the fact that it was a very well done film. The concept, the ideas that it was putting forth was very new, but it was very refreshing because it felt like, oh, it's a new way to make sense of the world if you're new to these types of thoughts and ideas.
Zeitgeist.
Well, okay. So I'll give you the...
Maybe we'll link to that in the show notes.
And to contextualize, yeah, when I say it's a conspiracy thing, like, it starts basically breaking down religion and showing that these myths are replete throughout many other religions, and it's just kind of breaking down religion in a way, in an analytical reductionist way, and then getting into 9/11. He transitions it into talking about 9/11 as being an inside job, and he's giving a bunch of evidence for that, and then all of a sudden he transitions that into, well, what would be the motivation? The banksters, does a good job basically just kind of weaving a good story, I'll say it that way, a plausible story. And then by the end of it, he's talking about RFID chips implanted in our skin to track us and, like, you know, big time global conspiracy. So for me on acid, I'd heard conspiracies before, but this was the first time it was done well in a piece of art. It was done well. I think before, when I saw Loose Change, before when I saw Alex Jones, I just wasn't into it. I was like, okay, yeah. Like, I wasn't even resistant to the idea that that conspiracy at high levels could be happening. I think it was just the delivery it was coming at me. I was like, I'm not one to get hooked by those things. You need to come at me with a good piece of art. And I feel that's what Zeitgeist was. So...
So those are some deep topics that you experience under the influence of a psychedelic, which, for the record, a big topic we're going to explore on today's show in this interview is your work specifically with psychedelics, and personally and professionally, with the film, of course, that or the film series, the documentary series that you completed recently with Gaia called Psychedelica. So Open Loop, we're going to get back to that. But was this your first LSD experience?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I started at like 14, 15. And there was two more things I wanted to say about that film as to why it turned me into a filmmaker.
Please, quick. Zeitgeist.
It was not only well done, and the soundtrack was really good. So it was a good quality film, put together well. You could tell that a lot of time put this thing together, a lot of attention, a lot of heart put it together. And it was free online as a well-made documentary, and it didn't have a name in it. It didn't have credits. It just had a link at the very end of it. So to that respect, it was anonymous. You go online, you could find out, oh, this is Peter Joseph. But to me, it was a way to circumvent most people's sales defenses, because you may not even realize it, but most things that are out there, YouTube doesn't get the top quality produced things. Those are things you typically have to pay for. So there's usually this, before you watch my documentary, let's settle up here, or, hey, it's my name, it's a promotion piece. This kind of could be argued because it did have a link at the end, but the way it came across when I was on acid was, I don't care if you know who I am. I don't want your money. I want you to wake up. That message was so loud and clear that I need to do that exact same thing. Wow. And so that turned me into a filmmaker.
In that moment,
acid and Zeitgeist turned me.
You
into
were
a documentary
stacking
maker.
Your hacks. Yeah, like you said, the combination mm-hmm. of the two is what is why the experience was so unique to you and powerful. Like you said, it turned you and inspired you to become a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, and what was really easy about it was I was a musician for my entire life. I was professional at this point, and I was also. I could program on Pro Tools all the drums, all the bass, everything except the vocals. And so I would build my entire songs on my own. And the way that it's laid out is very similar to how you edit film. So I had a kind of a step in the right direction. My brother happened to know animation and video editing. So he taught me the software for 2 hours and I ran with it. So I went from not being a filmmaker to watching this film, realizing I have to do it. Buying a laptop for $2,000, harvesting a bunch of footage that was not mine, just free shit, you know, that I could snag online, putting it together and putting my voice over top of it, writing the soundtrack for it. So it's like, to me, it was the next level up from being a musician of being able to communicate with an end user I will never meet, more than likely.
Right. You're using words in specific ways over top of some other experience, whether it's sound in the case of music, but in documentaries, it's the visual experience. And so you found all these clips. Was this your first documentary then? So what was, which one is that?
So 6 months after I watched Zeitgeist on acid, I released Esoteric Agenda.
Esoteric Agenda.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's your very first film, mm-hmm. Esoteric Agenda. I've never really interviewed you or grilled you on your life and history in this way, but it's cool. For the record, we're good buddies. We lived in Boulder together here these last few years.
Yeah.
While you've been working out here with doing a lot of work with Gaia. Shout out to Gaia.
Gaia.com.
The way I describe them is like a conscious Netflix.
That's probably the best way to describe it. It's an online video platform. Right. And it's all based or devoted entirely to conscious. So whether it's the body, aliens, disclosure, all the way to human optimization.
Got it. Yes, exactly. So, all right. So we're going to get to the psychedelic experience. It's interesting how psychedelics played a role in your personal journey getting into documentaries. And then you ended up creating a documentary series called Psychedelica. Let's go ahead and dive into that, because I'm sure that was a really unique, powerful project to be a part of. And you were telling me earlier, you said it took 6 months complete?
Yeah.
And was it an idea for 6 months before? Like, tell us the origin story and how this all came to be and that journey and what it's like to, because you've now, I know, creating a few documentaries. And now, was this your first docu-series?
That was, well, kind of. I did a four-part mini-series for David Icke's The People's Voice. It was The People's Voice television station. And it didn't fully go anywhere. It didn't last that long. But I put in four episodes of a show called Waking Infinity. As just shortly after that, then Psychedelica, well, then Gaia came along, and once I got there, I was hand selected to go there and pretty much make film there. And as soon as I get there, the higher up comes up and says, like, I know that when he was vetting me, hiring me in a way, I brought up psychedelics, and so he came to me afterwards and he was like, do you want to do a series on psychedelics and shamanism? And I said, sign me up. 6 months later, I didn't have much. Honestly, there was no one at Gaia. Everyone was there to help, but they just pretty much took their hands off. They didn't steer the message. They were just like, go ahead. They gave me the resources and a go ahead. So that's a big shout out to Gaia.
Totally.
But we had deadlines. And this is the first time I was like, okay, that's 7 hours of film in 6 months. And now that was from conception of the idea. That was from, do you want to make something on psychedelics and shamanism, to the first episodes coming out. And it took a little bit longer because episode one aired. I was still working on the last few episodes at that time. So it was a little bit more than 6 months. But that was basically, that was my baby. So in the first month, here's exactly how it broke down. I started reaching out to everybody in the field, everyone I could, and I started getting 85 to 90% yes. And the no's, like, I didn't have anyone, actually, truthfully, I didn't have anyone except for one doctor not respond. And I believe I know that doctor's schedule there, he's crazy busy. Got a bunch of yeses. So Dennis McKenna, Ralph Metzner, Stan Groff, Rick Strassman, DMT the Spirit Molecule, all the way to Dr. Joe Tafur, Daniel McQueen, David Nichols, he's a really big chemist, Roland Griffiths with Johns Hopkins University. The list really does go on and on and on, and there are some amazing women in that series as well. Kimba Arum, Marion Bone, who's actually my mother-in-law. There's quite a few people that make up that laundry list. So I got all yeses. I put the schedule together. I booked my travel to go meet up with the people that couldn't come into town. And then we just booked people, the rest of them to come into town. We filmed them and I immediately started getting transcription of everything they said. And I'm reading through it, highlighting it, turning it into a script, bam. And I had one point of, you know, like, somebody critiquing, you know, the executive producer critiquing before it moves on to publish. So it was the most rapid filmmaking I'd ever done. And it called upon me in a different way that the films in the past called upon me.
Totally. You had to rise up and be a high performer in a way and really, like, not take any breaks and go straight into the next phase, right into editing and script writing. And
yeah.
Wow. Powerful. So Psychedelica, this is your first kind of high level full series. You got the green light. Everyone you wanted to interview said yes. You had Gaia's full support. And it's out now, by the way. So if you do want to watch this, you might have seen it in a YouTube ad or something. You can get access to Psychedelica directly on Gaia's website, right? Yep. Through membership and
Gaia.com. Gaia is G-A-I-A. Gaia.com/psychedelica. And just add an A at the end of psychedelic. And that'll bring you right to the homepage. And you can, it's a subscriber-based thing.
Perfect, yeah.
But I think episode one is free to watch.
Oh, badass, yeah. Awesome. Sweet. So for those listeners and viewers out there that are wondering, okay, so know a little bit about psychedelics. And you know, they might think of mushrooms, or like we talked about earlier, LSD, and or psilocybin for LSD, for mushrooms, the the scientific term.
Right.
But there's more than that. And let's really unpack like what are psychedelics and how you would describe that. And from your experience, I would imagine you've interviewed lots of those experts, which I recognize a few of those names in a book I just started recently reading. Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind book.
Okay, yeah.
Which gets into psychedelics. We'll link that in the show notes. But yes, what are psychedelics and how do they present a potential positive role in our lives?
It's a really good question, especially when you ask the simplest thing, like what are psychedelics? Mm. It brings up two things for me. The classic definition of it, they call it classic psychedelics, and this includes LSD, psilocybin mushrooms, DMT, peyote, huachuma, mescaline from that, and I'm forgetting one, iboga. And what that means is what they do is...
those are all different types of names of psychedelics.
Those are different plants.
Different plants.
Yeah, specifically plants with psychedelic compounds. So that's what a psychedelic... Breaking down what a psychedelic is... It's terminology based, because once you get into the compound, it's not the psilocybin mushroom, it's the psilocybin inside of it. You take that and it agonizes the 5-HT2A receptors in the brain. That's a serotonin receptor. And so it starts modulating serotonin release, and there are a cascade of other neurochemicals that abound in those moments. So that's what a psychedelic is in the classical term. If you were to go to Wikipedia, it's a class of plants that agonize the 5-HT2A receptors. That doesn't answer the question, what are psychedelics?
Yeah.
It really doesn't. And anyone who's ever taken a psychedelic knows exactly that.
Right.
So there's something that seems to happen. There's different things that happen, like in the brain stem. What starts lighting up more is more rapid associations to what we would call salience or novelty, something that is new. So when you see people, like somebody who's on a mushroom, they'll be staring at their hand. The hand is always with you. It's always been with you, but there's something novel and new about it when you're on psychedelics.
Right.
And what that means is you're able to pick apart the patterns that you place value on. So like, the hand has no value. I need to get to the store and feed my kids and yada yada. Hand has no value. Under psychedelics, you start noticing value in intrinsically appreciating beauty, nature. It starts changing the way that you look at things, and that changes your behavior. So, what are psychedelics? They're a class of plants that cause us to step outside of our habituation, outside of our patterns. Why? That's the next thing that comes up. Why is there a class of plants that does this to consciousness? Now we're getting into because when Prohibition started, maybe we weren't ready. Maybe we were in a contraction phase culturally where we were like, we need to hunker down. There's war. We need to get conservative. Now there's this expansive phase where people are like, okay, tell me about psilocybin. All right, Denver, Oakland, you know, like.
Yeah, it's kind of like a renaissance right now. Like yeah. People are decriminalizing it.
Thanks to people like Michael Pollan. Thanks to MAPS. Thanks to, calling all filmmakers, you know, people getting into any field. If it's on the upswing, get into it. Not just because of how you can capitalize on it monetarily, but because if you believe in it, you're getting a part of something at the ground floor. And all I can say is I feel honored and blessed that somehow I did find myself as being a filmmaker spokesman of a certain class of plants. And I get to explain these types of things because I believe in the old days, saying that psychedelics are agonists to the 5-HT2A receptors and they fry your brain cells and everything like that, that was good enough for most people. They were like, oh, they're bad drugs? Oh, it's like it belongs in the categories next to bath salts and heroin. We don't want it. We don't put it on our street. So everyone was in that conservative mode. Now people are like, but children, you know, like who have intractable epilepsy, why can't they take cannabis oil if it's the only thing that actually works? Cannabis, by the way, is not a classic psychedelic. It does not, as far as we know, unless something has changed within the past couple of years, doesn't agonize the 5-HT2A. But we're talking about plants that alter consciousness in a psychedelic way.
Right.
Part of it is to open us up, I believe, to break us out of our habituation, so what we believe is possible opens up. And sometimes when we realize that certain things we thought were impossible are flexible boundaries, then we start asking, well, what do I want to do with that power? What would I do if I realized I could actually get up and speak in front of people? Could I do that as a career? Like, you know, and starting to question uncomfortable boundaries from people that are just like, oh, that's impossible. I would never do it. I don't even want to look at the wall that reminds me of the thing I can't do.
So just to reflect on you sharing a little bit about, in terms of like, what is the value, the potential benefit of these plans, as you were describing how it can help us to see what's possible, further our potential, and basically have more of an open mind and belief around what's possible. Sometimes that can be an impact that psychedelics can have to activate our brain in that way. And hearing you describe the science of what's going on to activate the serotonin is very interesting. And I imagine lots of people listening to this episode might have hesitations. Now, how can we, like, what are your thoughts on going about psychedelics in like the smartest way? Like, I know there's, you know, the legal way and then the illegal way, and smart doesn't necessarily mean legal or illegal, mm-hmm. right? But like the smartest, like healthiest way, like, you know, because can there be downsides? Like what's your experience with, you know, for those that have hesitation around it to, you know, talk about doing it in a mindful, smarter way, you know?
Well, that's a very good question. There can be downsides to anything. Drinking too much water, not supplementing enough, and demanding something of your body. There's downsides to many things. And I think that it's a sensitive topic because these things were just yesterday viewed, historically speaking, just yesterday they were viewed as a hard narcotic. Meaning there's a lot of guilt and shame that was imposed into kids when you go to school and a big officer with a gun on their hip comes in and says, these are narcotics, just so you know, if you see anybody on the streets, you turn them in. If I find you with them, someone like me is going to come and put you, you know, in juvie or whatever, but you're going to have to face somebody like me with a gun on his hip. So it really did cleverly instill a lot of shame around the use of psychedelics. So first and foremost, you want to stay on the legal side of it as much as possible, mainly for the reason of you want to at least feel that the way you're doing it is you don't have to hide it. You don't have to bring any shame or like
you're doing something wrong.
Exactly. And that's probably one of the best pieces of advice is when I started doing psychedelics when I was really young, I did it irresponsibly. I knew that it was something my parents wouldn't approve of. I did it anyway. It was amazing for me. But there were times where I was like, oh my God, this is taking forever and I need to face my parents soon, you know? And then that brings up this whole, in the middle of a very suggestible psychedelic experience that is beautiful, all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, my parents. Oh shit, this might be, I could get in trouble right now. And I had some really severe run-ins with authority peaking on psychedelics. Not smart. So that is the wrong way to go about it. You want to make sure, and this is why I feel that the regulated side of it is probably a good thing. As much as I believe government take your hands off my ability to access plants,
right,
you know, that are now really being proven to be a lot safer than they've ever been given credit for. You want to stay on that side of it. You want to stay on the legal side of it because it really means that you have to make some kind of a commitment. You know, if you just get it from yada yada down the street and you do it in the basement so your parents don't find you, it's not an optimal setting. It's not an optimal mind frame to go into a psychedelic with. And if you don't know what psychedelics are, people like Stan Grof are saying it is a non-specific amplifier. It will find things non-specifically and amplify them. That doesn't mean that it's not intelligently. And I believe psychedelics are intelligent and they will find whatever is most powerful and prominent, which is sometimes not even something going on in your conscious mind. But I was thinking about eating, you know, a great meal, or I was thinking about lovemaking, and all of a sudden this terrible experience started coming on. Psychedelics will amplify your subconscious to show you you're hiding from something right now, and there's something else going on. And psychedelics can turn what would be an otherwise pleasurable evening into something very, you know, scary and can be traumatic. Mm. So I guess the quick way of just like answering that question, what's the best way people go about it? A, do your research, like read about it. Right. You don't have to read too much about what it's going to feel like. Try not to pretend like you're going to ever figure that shit out.
Right. Listen to podcasts like this as well.
Listen to podcasts. Yeah. Remember, like, try and take a look at the way these things have been ancestrally used.
Yes.
And I believe that's super crucial because even in a scientific way, we've evolved for many, like some say 70,000 years. Every culture has some kind of mind-bending something or another from the plant kingdom that they take, or the animal kingdom sometimes. So we've been doing this a long time. Look at the empirical evidence. They always bring in some form of art, symbols, an altar. And in that altar, it's religious because it's devoted to. All of our devotion is there. There's a science to these things because they're environmental triggers. They really do work. You light sage. That, you know, like that has like an olfactory thing to your trigeminal nerve. There's very real things to all of that. There's a philosophy behind how you set it up. That's how the ancestry, our ancestry really viewed it. You celebrate, but you don't hide from the demons, the shadows and stuff like that. And that's why they would have these scary masks. And you look back into Chinese characters or gods and deities, and they're like severing heads and stepping on, you know, humans, and all to represent something. Don't hide from the darkness. Acknowledge that you wish to move towards what, you know, like whatever it is you're using psychedelics for.
Right.
Optimal human potential, spiritual understanding, relief from cluster headaches. List goes on and on and on. Acknowledge what you're doing it for, and acknowledge that there are going to be things that fall on this side of your value system and that side of your value system. Meaning there's things that you're going to like and things that you're going to not like. Appreciate the fact that both are important, and probably the most surprising and most beautiful discoveries come from the things you didn't realize you needed, the difficult parts of a psychedelic experience. So acknowledge that it can and often will get challenging and difficult if you bring your heart to a ceremonial, I want to do this because I want to be a better person. You're going to face your shit. That's just bottom line. Mm-hmm. So the most responsible way moving forward for me is make sure what you're bringing to it, set and setting, your mindset, the way you think about psychedelics, acknowledging that people may have shamed you for the thought of it or that you had shame on it. Acknowledge all that. Realize that you are going to work through it at some point if you're taking a path of trying psychedelics, and acknowledge that it's not just our ancestry. There's futuristic ways of looking at it. Microdosing, it's taking away the stigma of being some hippie dancing at Love Park to the Grateful Dead. That's a stigma that was placed on by filmmakers and media makers and people who used audiovisual arts to give a image. Oh, psychedelics, look at this crazy woman out of her mind dancing half naked in Love Park. That was the image we were given. There's so many better images. The CEO, the Steve Jobs, the Silicon Valley coder, the top-level athlete, the UFC fighter that uses it for training, the elderly who are using it for end-of-life therapy right before dying, people with cluster headaches, people with intractable depression, no other treatment works, anxiety, list goes on and on and on, antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral.
And a lot of these things are being studied and proven, correct? Like there's science on a lot of this.
There's now finally real science on it.
Right. So in the start of Michael Pollan's book, he talks about it as if it's like a renaissance, if you will. Right.
Third wave of psychedelics.
Third wave. So we're on the third wave, and it could be, I mean, a part of me wants to say, hopefully the last, like it won't go away, like they're here to stay, but they might go away again. Who are we to say? Mm-hmm. I would like to think that I have the belief and the confidence in all the generations that are alive right now that are playing in this space and working in this space, because it is powerful. I mean, personally, I've experienced powerful healing from these plants. I haven't tried all of the different psychedelics, but your point around set and setting and intention, mm-hmm. and like you said, working, you know, to summarize, don't just appreciate and celebrate the good, like face the bad or the dark sides that come up. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it can be your subconscious. It sounds like reflecting back in itself, and it might scare you, it might look a little scary, but work through it. Like whatever it is, base your stuff and work through it.
Yeah. And it's only sustainable having the darker side be mm-hmm. with the light side. It's only sustainable. Yeah. It's the same as the reason why in the day, like fire, you're not surrendering to gravity anymore. You're up and you're animated and you're doing stuff. And then the fire goes out, you need to put it to bed, and you are surrendering to gravity, and all these repair processes can start happening. It's the same thing. The only way to sustainably move into a path of self-discovery, whether it's with psychedelics or not, self-discovery is always going to have realizations of the beauty and realizations of what we would characterize as the horrors of life. They are sustainable. They are not enemies. They are dancing partners. This is a tango. And by acknowledging and appreciating that the dark sides are there, the more we can get to a point where we're not subconsciously, oh, it's the boogeyman. Oh, it's like we need away from that.
Stuck in a state of fear.
In a state of fear. Leverage fear. Understand that fear is a mechanism of communication. And when we feel it, that is the high point where you sit down or you still yourself or you pay attention to it. You find clarity in it. And you nudge up against it. You do not run from it. That seems to be the fight or flight response that we have to it is, oh, fear. I either fight, which means I'm fighting the thing that I'm afraid of, maybe not even the real thing. So we're resisting it by trying to fight it or we're running away from it. And really, I think that when we nudge up against our fears, especially under psychedelics, we build skill sets of being able to transfer that across different platforms. So whereas you learned a lesson on how to overcome your fears under a psychedelic ceremony, later you need to have a heart-to-heart with somebody and you didn't realize, like, this needs to be said, but I'm so scared of this conversation because of the way it's going. That psychedelic experience could help you get over the fear of not expressing, of what it would be to express yourself honestly to somebody. And it can transfer across platforms. And I think that's what's beautiful about human consciousness and why we're trying to wake it up. And where I think psychedelics come in is what it does is it allows you to realize that anything you learn anywhere is transferable anywhere. And that's the integrative intelligence. And that's why psychedelics, I guess the last most responsible thing to do with psychedelics is don't think at any moment in time that the psychedelic experience ends when you're not feeling high or tripping or in it, under the influence of it anymore. Right. It doesn't stop there. It's part of your life that will go on forever, but you must integrate. The only thing that I believe most people are forgetting about in their practices, they're looking at the peak performance moment, the peak of the psychedelic. Yes. But what is that doing for you? How is that feeding into a better life? How is that moving forward in a good way? Or is it just aha information that you share with a friend and hopefully they'll see how cool it was that you had this peak experience? Don't rest on it, invest it. So invest those experiences into your future by truly integrating them. Look for moments where you can integrate that understanding into another field and benefit everything in your life.
Hello, listeners of the Elevate Your State Show. TJ here with a quick little station identification commercial break. First off, I hope you're enjoying today's episode so far. I'll make this brief and to the point. I'm excited to share that all of the work that we're doing within Elevate Your State is brought to you by a book and a project that I've been working on for the last 4 years called The Art of Health Hacking. So the book, The Art of Health Hacking, is available over on healthhackerbook.com. And it's all about merging self-care with sustainable high performance, profiling the innovation in healthcare and how to really take your health into your own hands and optimize your health from the inside out. This book is going to show you what it's all about, my friends. So again, healthhackerbook.com. If that resonates with you, there is free shipping on the book. You buy the book, I pay for shipping. And anyways, hope you enjoy the rest of today's show, my friends. You are now free to elevate your state.
Oh, I gotta take my glasses off to say 100% kudos. I appreciate you sharing that. That's such a great point and a reminder for people, you know, and that this isn't like experiencing these plants, these compounds, these psychedelics with intention are not done. It's not done to just get high, in quotes. You know, I'm air quoting it right now if you're not watching the video. And in terms of how they have been demonized in the past, at least what's coming up for me in terms of people in my sphere, in terms of how they relate to maybe me experiencing and enjoying cannabis, that plant, like you said, it's not a classic psychedelic, but it has psychoactive experience. And
I believe it is a psychedelic.
Right, right. Yes. Yeah. Well, I was because you talk about it inside of psychedelic a little bit. So is the shame, like you said, the emotion built into it, and you can leverage. It's not just about the high. It's about what you can learn and integrate from that experience. And integration is such a key word. And all of my experiences with ceremonial type settings of experiencing psychedelic compounds, which I've had a fair share, one of which I briefly mentioned in my book, the integration was my favorite part, you know, and I because the integration is what can lead to the transformation and really instill the nuggets that came from it in a way that's related back to your own life. And that's what it's about. I mean, if people listening to this are like wondering like the value, I mean, the value is like upgrading your overall life and view of life and working through stress, not having to live in the fight or flight response, knowing how to recognize that aspect of the nervous system and work through it and to use your breath and all of these things that psychedelics can do to help you reconnect with the inner you. It's really beautiful. And so I want to acknowledge you and appreciate you for saying and affirming the point around integrating and doing it with intention. And like you said earlier, go within the legal sphere. So can we talk about the legal sphere for a second? Sure. Where things stand. So we're in 2019 right now, and there are several organizations making a difference to get certain psychoactive compounds legalized for studies, for science, right? Which is the step forward. It's not, you know, you know, who's to say if this should be recreational or not? I mean, who knows where things are going to go? But you know, I know there's been some cities at this point that have decriminalized psilocybin, mushrooms, for instance. Where are we at legally with this? And I'm sure it's different state by state and city by city, it sounds, and state by federal, like all of these things.
So the best of my understanding on the legal side, because there's always terminology, and that's why lawyers, like, they speak legalese.
Right.
But the best of my understanding is we've decriminalized psilocybin in so the mushrooms here in Denver, and then in Oakland, all psychedelics, all classic psychedelics, so peyote included, DMT,
LSD.
I believe so.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, Oakland. So they're beyond. They're not just mushrooms.
Yeah, and so the big movement along with that is decriminalized nature, and you'll see that online. They're talking about decriminalized nature because these are plants. They come this way from the earth, and the science is now telling us if done moderately responsibly, there will be no ill effects, moderately responsibly. And that's, you don't even have to go ceremonial with it. But anyway, to stay on point, decriminalization is not legalization.
That doesn't mean it's legal, right?
Decriminalizing puts it on and this is the best of my understanding, it puts it on a lower priority level for law enforcement. Meaning, like, you know, a classic example is, like, if a cop's on, you know, one side of the street and catty corner on two different sides of the street, you know, someone is either taking mushrooms or whatever, and you have somebody over there who's stealing a bike, you go for the person stealing the bike. It lowers it on the priority list. It does not admonish or keep you from being able to be penalized, punished, slap on the wrist, whatever it is. And I'm sure it's different between Denver and Oakland exactly how they're going to go about it.
Cool.
So that's
and everywhere else it's illegal.
Yeah, but it's following so closely the model and the framework of how cannabis started unraveling its prohibition. It's following on the coattail, so I think it's going to happen quicker than the cannabis thing.
Got it. Awesome. Well, that's affirming. And at least it's being also decriminalized for scientific study. So I'm sure you interviewed a lot of people using it maybe with studies with patients for certain conditions. Like what value of psychedelics look like for, what are the biggest categories that it's being tested out for right now doing clinical trials?
I mean, so it would fall under big pharma. That's the biggest interest that seems to have in it. So it's for medicine. And therapy, you know, but it's basically under the umbrella of big pharma. That's the biggest interest. Those are the I would say the funders primarily. I'm talking blanket statement. Those are primarily the funders of the clinical trials, which aren't cheap, which get people in and they can start gathering data, double blinding it, placebo, comparing it, seeing how effective it is. You can put science upon that, because if you can do that, then it may not be as widespread recreationally as cannabis, but if products are allowed to be made out of psilocybin, I'm already getting people coming to me saying, like, you know, get ready. Here's what products are now going. You're going to start seeing with psilocybin next, and then you'll have peyote and ibogaine and DMT and stuff like that. But you can only buy it in this amount, and you have to have, or it only goes for psychotherapy, cluster headaches. There are various other uses. Exactly. So products will be made around it, and as much as people think that demoralizes or it strips the spirit out of the plant, I don't believe it's a either or. I believe it's a yes and. They are amazing, beautiful plants that can be used spiritually, but it's like somebody going and buying a million hammers from a hammer factory and building a house with the hammers as the bricks rather than the hammers to actually build the houses. And you could say, well, that's such an inefficient use of it. And, you know, the other person would say, no, it's a piece of art. Really, the industry built on top of something like this, I find to be very beautiful of a thing. Like, so the fact that Big Pharma wants to get into it, the one thing I think that's going to help with is the stigma. You're going to see their advertising being like, it's not somebody getting locked up, put in chains and put behind bars because of these things. It's a grandfather who can't play with his grandkids because of his cluster headaches, or somebody at end of life who wants to just accept that death is this natural next step. Somebody who has intractable depression, think about that. Intractable depression, nothing seems to work. Or intractable anxiety, these types of words that are getting placed on top of conditions that these plants, do something almost that no other pharmaceutical or monomolecular can do. So there's something promising in that, and it's getting us to appreciate nature more.
Very. Yeah, I love that. The Oakland angle, like you said, decriminalizing nature. So with Big Pharma getting involved, though, will they want to create synthetic versions like they've done with CBD?
Almost definitely.
Yeah.
Almost definitely.
So, yeah, exactly. They're studying them so that they can probably create their own version and patent.
And my disclaimer to it, as much as I believe what Big Pharma could bring to this is a breaking of the stigma.
Right.
There's always the good with the bad, because the thing is when money comes in, you have people that do not care about the pre-existing culture around something, such as shamanism or respect for the plant, sustainability, you name
they
it.
Just care for about the
All money. They care about is that financial incentive. And we currently have it set in place to where you cannot legally enforce them to care about the culture around it. You can't legally enforce that. So It's just going to happen. And these things, the wave is already happening. We're on the wave. It's swelling. And so what I see is, I don't even suggest people go out and take psychedelics, to be perfectly honest. That would be too presumptuous. I don't believe that everyone will get the same benefit that I believe some people can. Right. So I say, if you're feeling the calling, then I believe you should go for it in the most responsible way possible. But I really feel that we're on the rise of something. All I want to hitch a ride with that rising wave, doesn't matter whether it's psychedelics, AI, you know, like just the beauty of us having the internet, doesn't matter what it is, consciousness, hitch a ride on this wave. Every single time, if we can bring more conscious awareness into our cultural fashionable things for people to do, especially in groups, together as community, then I believe that no matter what, people are going to start solving some of these problems. Nobody likes the fact that industry destroys groundwater, pollutes the air, pollutes the earth, has negative impacts. Nobody really likes that. It's just some people are so much more incentivized by their profits than they are by anything else. I think that is a revolution for the artists of the world to come in and change the way we perceive what is forward as a species mean to us. A real artist can inspire people and render almost everything else obsolete. If you can make it financially, if you can financially incentivize more than any other option doing something good for the world, you're going to naturally attract that tidal wave. It's going to start swelling. So I say, instead of battling against industries, right, they're already there. Make them better from the inside out is following the natural flow. And when we're talking about flow, flow psychology, individual flow, group flow, planetary flow, what does it mean that industry is an agenda between a bunch of people and resources? It's an agenda. It's moving forward fast. It's having a big footprint, right? So if we're talking psychedelics, if we're talking big ag, if we're talking, you know, big pharma, it doesn't matter what we're talking about. When you're voting with your dollar, you are changing the landscape out there. Little by little, you're changing the landscape. If you don't believe in canola oil, but you don't realize that you're actually funding the promotion and the proliferation of destroying Amazon rainforest to grow one season's worth of canola oil or whatever the exact facts are on that, the concept is still the same.
Right.
The concept is there's something beyond our small economic mind, and that's the collective economic mind. So I feel that if consciousness can hitch a ride on the psychedelic bandwagon, bring it along for the ride, because we're talking about waking up humanity to the impact we're having. Right. Everyone thinks, oh, I'm so insignificant. I'm one of 7 billion people. Don't buy the hype. Don't believe that narrative. You are so much fucking more powerful than you've ever given yourself credit for. The problem is you see illusionary impossibility walls in front of you, so it's futile to test them. But once you test them, once you realize that that brick wall is flexible, bendable, and from a different angle, not even really there, holy shit, your mind starts changing and you realize you can bring good into the world. You just never thought of it. You were in panic mode. You needed to make money for your family. So you said, fuck other families. I'm all about me because I'm in survival mode. What good father, what good mother wouldn't do that for their kids? So I think what it is it's going to take the artists to come in and build a new concept, a new model for how we can do this better, more efficiently, in a way that serves most people.
Right.
That's going to be
the call forward, the tidal wave of waking the artist within. Oh, that could be I can see a series of books coming already from you. Yeah. Yeah. So love it. And consciousness could ride the wave with psychedelics, as our collective. And I appreciate you calling people forward. That's such a good point. Sometimes we can feel like we're on an island or it is futile. You know, what came up for me when you were talking about that brick wall was, is seeing believing, or is believing seeing? And to really let that sink in, to see how you take inventory on how you relate to those words. you know, and what they mean for you, and how you approach your beliefs around what's possible in your life, right? So, yeah, that's where a lot of your work has been. So let's hear, like, so what I want to hear personally, like, what are some routines? Like, what are your ways to make sure that Ben's health, that your energy, that your performance is dialed in? Because you've obviously got to have a clear mind and good energy to be able to create the amount of amazing documentary type projects in your life. So, like, I'm curious, like, I know you're big on a few things in particular, but I want to hear you describe kind of how you relate to your own health hacking journey.
Interesting. Yeah. Thanks very much. I actually can even show you an example. I have some things in this bag I can bring over here and just show you an example of what I carry with me as a way to stay sharp.
Certainly. Please. Let's do it. We're going to step into your health hacking bag of tricks to stay sharp. So let's go ahead and dive in and see what
right
you
on.
Got.
So the first thing here is the bag.
Okay.
Now, so like...
Goji's even watching, my dog.
Yeah. You will love this. He's like, what toys you got for me, bro?
Exactly.
I'll show you the toys. The first thing I want to explain is, because this is an experience and this is an inverted altar, meaning... Your altar pieces are in here, but it's the altar of movement. It's the altar of flow for me. And this altar can change because you can take this stuff out and put other altar pieces in it.
Yes.
So this is magic terminology behind something that I do just with my physical body to break out of if I've been sitting in front of a computer too long or whatever.
Right.
So the first thing is the bag. This is one that I found. But I had one before that was a choose a bag that is good for you, that means something to you. I had one before from Tibet. It was a beautiful bag, but the zipper broke. And then at the same exact time, I found this one. This one has the initials AMS on it, which stands for two things. And I didn't realize it when I picked it up. I was just like, oh, cool, bag with a dog or a bear print or something.
Cougar,
like. I think that's a cougar, you know, that's probably a cougar. But AMS. That is those are the initials for Amsterdam International, AMS. That's the airport. That's where I found out that I was going to have a daughter. Ugh. And I didn't realize it, but when we had our daughter, we named her Anna Laura Maria Stewart, which is the same initials
what?
As that. You know?
AMS, the exact same initials.
So I use a bag that reminds me of my daughter. It reminds me of my wife, whom I met in Amsterdam, and it has this cool cougar paw. Why not?
Wow.
So
to cougar paw when mountain lion when they are showing their nails, which they don't often show their nails.
Exactly.
So he's attacking when we got him on the print.
So the bag is like if you were to unfold it would be the tapestry you put down over top of your altar.
Yes, which Amanda has gotten me into that. We have altars here.
Yeah, and there's a reason for these things. Like an altar are in flow psychology, they are external environmental triggers. So a lot of the times you'll have things like sage and Palo Santo and sweet grass and things that you can burn. That's part of it because you want to get your olfactory senses into it. But so I didn't prepare for this actually. I just noticed that had a few elements of it.
Oh,
it's two different kinds of hacky sacks and poi. And poi, you spin these things around and do like, you know, ninja stuff with them. And I can show an example afterwards. But the reason why I use poi.
How do you spell poi?
P-O-I.
P-O-I. All right. We'll link that in the show notes. Where do you get these?
Well, these ones. So this was a gift to me. And it's kind of cool just for you to see. Marvin Ong, I think is his name, is a really amazing flow artist. And these were his. He gave it to a beautiful woman named Anne Marie. And Anne Marie gave them to me. And so I cherish these as something to remember her with and to introduce bilateral training.
Love this.
Now... what I want to do is eventually make my own of these. Uh-huh. And these, the little thing at the end of it is pretty much like a hacky sack. It's not much different. So I want to actually have hacky sacks inside of it as dynamic toys that can poi that turn into two hacky sacks.
Totally.
And
amazing.
So anyway, the thing I love about this is it's so compact. You can really just fold this up to the size of a, you know, grapefruit or something like that. But here's bilateral training. You start spinning poi and everything. You're warming up your shoulders. You're You're creating synchrony between the two hemispheres of the brain. You're using both hemispheres of the body in a way that's synchronous, musical, patterned, habitual. And it's a great way to warm up. So it's also sweet as shit to see people spinning poi.
Totally.
Love so that's it. For the arms.
Okay.
And these are for the feet, hacky sacks, and the hands and arms and the rest of the body. And
I see one of
so the reason why you want to train your feet
and your hands,
the reason why you want to train both of them is because your brain has sensory inputs from your feet, your mouth, your eyes, your hands, and everything else, all the rest of the sensory, it takes up such a small portion of the brain. So if you really want to drive in hard patterns, start writing with your opposite hand. Start doing things with hacky sacks where you're just keeping the shit in the air. You're keeping it alive.
Coach, over and over. It's a toy.
It is a toy. Really, like these are...
A dog toy.
It could be. You know what? And this is all about trying to find like, how do you then include your dog? Integrate your dog into the play.
Totally.
Because what you're trying to do is introduce more play into your life. Play is the most optimal environment for learning.
Hmm.
All mammals do it. They learn through play.
Yes,
we are psychological, so you'll have more psychological ways to play as well. But the body is never forgotten about. If you're on the computer, it's not like you're not doing anything with your body. You're actively sitting there staring at a computer, clicking with your hands. It's a bodily activity.
Totally.
This is a way to snap out of your patterning. So also, hacky sack. You're working on bilateral training your feet. You're working on your balance. You're working on your core. You're working on your eye-foot coordination. It's doing so many little micro adjustments to your fascial structure, your connective tissues in your body. That's waking up parts of your body. That's allowing for new water, new blood, new nutrients to come in, more oxygen to, in a sense, prime your body for more activity. What that does is all of it connects up underneath your sphenoid bone in your brain. It houses the pineal and the pituitary gland. The proper gait cycle and movement cycles will actually flex it and milk or palpate that section of the midbrain, and it will and the brain stem, and actually will start to have downstream effects to your entire endocrine system. Meaning improper posture, improper gait cycle, improper and non-functional movement has the opposite effect. Poor downstream effects to the rest of your body. So the reason why this is called my altar is because it's literally priming the body for higher level consciousness, more spiritual connection, more lateral thinking, bilateral training, meaning understanding and respecting what I was talking before about the light and the dark parts of psychedelic experiences. It's the same thing with the right side and the left side of your body. When you're walking, you are continually offsetting your left balance by assuming right balance and vice versa. And you're doing it, turning it into a cycle, a pattern, a rhythm, a wave, music. And so this is what I call working towards body poetry. Mm. You are actually giving poetry by the graceful way you use these types of instruments. And it's a bag of toys. That's all it
exactly.
really is. You carry it with you, you bust it out, you go to a park, you start doing hacky sack, people are going to watch. And there, you know, some people might come like, hey, and join me, you know, join our group. Let's do hacky sack together. Group flow. You see people playing, dogs see people playing, they want to get involved. It's contagious.
Yes.
So like this is the root of all learning. And the reason why this is my altar is because it reminds me.
The root of all learning. I love this.
Is play.
Play.
The root of all is play and engagement is challenge. Because if you're playing, but you've beat this game 100 times, or if you're playing, but you've done this thing 1,000,000 times, then you're not doing what flow psychologists and like, you know, Flow Genome Project is talking about, that 4% increase past your skill level. That's where you place your challenges. That's where you will find, that's the small sliver of a window you will find flow.
To increase your risk just a little bit, mm-hmm. to increase your reward and create that state of flow, which is something we've talked about before here on the Elevate Your State show, and these optimal states of both feeling and performing at your best all throughout your life in different ways. It's remarkable science. I know it's a big personal and professional area of keen interest of yours.
Of course.
And I loved you sharing right there. It made me think about you talking about the senses right? Of how we have more sensory inputs, you said, on our fingers and our toes.
Hands, and our, feet, and our, eyes, mouth.
More so than anywhere else in the body. I just had another guest on the show who was a barefoot running specialist. Nice. She trains people on how to run with better form and oftentimes is as minimalist as possible. And she coached and trained and gave me tips on how to work in barefoot so that I can be done in a sustainable way. Like actually, like I was like, oh, well, can I just run with my socks on? She's like, well, you could, but you wouldn't be getting the full experience because the full experience is the direct connection of the earth touching my skin.
I love this woman already.
Yeah, I bet you.
I would. Like how you said work in as well. As well, it's, right. It's exercise yeah. can be such a spiritual. It is a spiritual experience when you allow it to be. When you don't block that from it, and you're right, the connection with the earth. I call it listening with your feet. When you're walking, you're listening to the earth. This is what the indigenous would do when they were tracking primarily barefoot. Everyone thinks that when you're seeing these movies of Indian trackers, like our mirror neurons are firing at us and telling us what we would do, be walking through the woods trying to figure something out. Use your brain, use your eyes, right? Maybe listen, but you can listen with your feet. You can listen with your hands. You can listen with your throat. You can listen with your heart. It's actually very possible. There are neurons in your heart. There are neurons in your gut. There's neurology in your skin. It's actually reflexive. These are reflex organs. And there are points on the hands, on the feet, on the face, on the ears that actually represent different organs and different systems within the body. So we are a riddle in a way.
Totally.
And yes, many of us are trying to apply sciences and models to figure out this riddle. And I think the human riddle is number one what we should be working towards. But you're totally right. Walking hummingbird.
We got a hummingbird just joining us up here.
Hey, baby.
Life elevated.
Yeah.
I love that.
Dude, I'm glad that just happened because animal totems and things from nature, when we're talking about listening to nature, animals are speaking, dude. I've had the most crazy amount of animal totem meetings this year ever. Two black bears, a rabid groundhog that attacked me and my daughter. On the 4th of July, we almost totaled our minivan with the whole family in there by hitting a deer. Dead snakes, dead birds, many living birds, vultures.
We buried a dead fox on a hike 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Until a bear came along and dug it up.
What are your thoughts? Let me ask you a question. What are your thoughts on how do you look at animals coming into your day, your moment?
Just for the record, where we're sitting right now, our first day of sleeping in this house, the next morning we woke up, we had a fox in the backyard, right in the rocks in our backyard. We live like on a mountain, like on the top of a hill and an acre out here in North Boulder. And we had a hummingbird that didn't actually just visit us on the deck outside like this one just did. Mm-hmm. This one came inside. I had the door open and the hummingbird was inside for like a minute, oh, yeah, flying around, like dumping all its hummingbird energy. So my view on animals is, and you know, me recently getting passionate about the wolf reintroduction project out here in Colorado. And we got this little 2-year-old goji bear here. Yeah. You know, I've been a dog lover forever and just realizing how all dogs are 90% wolf, and just the history and the impact, like with videos like Wolves Change Rivers, the impact that animals have on our ecosystem, on our ecology. You know, yes, they can give us life. Yes, they can give life to each other. But the spiritual side of it, right? And living in Boulder, there's of course lots of like spirit animal discussions. And you know, we have a bison skull hanging from the ceiling here from a bison we actually ate. Like, you know, I grew up on Buffalo Road. Like, I've been attracting bison like crazy right now in my life. So like there's animals that I connect with more, I think, naturally. And you know, hearing what the Lakota tribe, I think, would remark about the bison, how they would just provide for everything that they would need, whether it's food or shelter and clothing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for asking. Tell me more. Like, why do you ask? And
well, because I feel, you know, everything we're talking about. So the reason why I use Poi is a very good example. But the same thing with the hacky sacks. And mind you, there are many other additions you could put in there. I put tarot decks in mine because it depends on where I'm going. It's just a bag carrying shit you want to do, but it's shit that you want to remind yourself of.
So you could also put in supplements.
A notepad, supplements, water. I sometimes ipadu because it's this green Andean plant or mixture of plants that you put in your kind of almost like chewing tobacco, but it's coca. It also it helps you at elevation. A bunch of different stuff. Why not put that in a bag before you do your movement? It gives you energy, zones you in a little bit more. But when we're talking about like listening and animal spirits and stuff like that, poi, you have this thing hanging off your hand, but when you get it in motion, you can get a flow of it. And what it's doing is sending you back information, your body, information in real time about the forces and vectors that you're moving within. So that's communicating to your fascia. Your fascia loves that shit. It's the neurology of force and vectors and compression and expansion and the proper use of balancing your body. It communicates in real time. It looks fiber optic. So you're turning this poi into an extension of your arm. You're controlling it. You're giving it life by making it an extension of you. Same thing with a hacky sack. It just detaches and reattaches from time to time, and you're giving it life. It's giving you something to play around with the variable of gravity and your body and its capacity. So it's turning shit on. So are the plants and animals. When you come across an animal that by its own volition was there, an eagle that happened to fly over, or a bear that came across your path, even an animal bone or something like that that you come across, bugs, hummingbirds, whatever it might be, these are sentient beings. These are tapped into nature far more than we are in our more westernized, modernized way of being tapped into each other through culture and business and art and technology and stuff like that, that these are messengers of nature. You know, the same as a psychedelic is a messenger of nature. Dennis McKenna calls them ambassadors of Gaia. Gaia is the intelligence, the idea that the planet that we are living on is an intelligent, sentient being in itself, and we are the many cells that are propagating on top of it.
Because Gaia means Earth. And
Gaia is the Greek mother, Earth.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Dennis McKenna repeats.
He says psychedelics are the ambassadors of Gaia. And what that basically, what does an ambassador do?
Yeah.
They go and they communicate.
Yeah. They interface. They communicate.
They interface.
Messengers. Yes.
So psychedelics being an ambassador for Gaia, so are the hummingbirds.
Yeah.
So are the birds. Oh, yeah. So are the humans. So is gravity. Playing with these toys and keeping them up in the air, you're listening. You have to actively listen. Walking on the earth barefoot, you need to make that contact to truly listen.
So,
put on gloves and try and tie your shoes. Prime
sure.
example.
You
need the dexterity. You need to be able to really touch and listen.
Definitely.
So to me, I believe that one of the greatest breakdowns in our disconnection from nature and spirit is our inability. Don't blame it on culture. It's our the lack of discipline and moving towards listening better, asking the right questions and listening for the language that will be speaking back to us. I say it, standing at the mouth of a void. You don't know what's beyond it, but if you call into it, you might hear something come back. When you hear something come back that's mind-blowing, that's like a psychedelic experience. You're entering the void.
Mystical experience.
Right? Yeah, right. And you call out to it with all your unconscious and conscious questions, and it will call back to you, and it will amplify those things, and it will start answering your questions. And a lot of times we don't want certain things answered, but we do. So we ask the question and we hear the hard truth, and then we got to work through it, and we need integration time to work through it. I feel that using things like poi, hacky sack, movement, breath, awareness, those types of things, roots those abstract outer other dimensional experiences back into the physical world. Put it back in your body. Use it in gravity. Mull it over while you're spinning poi, while you're doing hacky sack, while you're breathing, while you're engaging the body. Turn it into the physical fiber and fabric of the body. Make it cross-pollinate. Make it transfer from the abstract into the real. Turn that thing that you did in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu yesterday, that challenge that you accomplished, turn it into something that you can use in your relationship, and radical honesty, you know, bring about real honesty, surprise your partner with something really honest. You know, these things happen when you let them, when you stop letting these in like illusory impossibility walls get in the way of communication. It's really about relationship. It's about communication. I don't think it's, when I'm talking about these toys, I don't think it's a complete mystery as to why if you have a kid kicking around a ball on a field, other kids are like, fuck, I want to come and kick a ball on a field. Why don't we make a game around it? Why don't we establish no, you can't and yes, you can's to make it more difficult. We'll get teams. We'll go in on it. This is where learning happens. This is where community happens. This is what wants to happen with human consciousness. It doesn't want to be an island. It wants to connect. It wants to grow. So let it. Bring a fucking toy into a field. I guarantee you someone else is going to be in the same wavelength and be like, dude, you have a Frisbee, but no one to throw it with. Why not throw that Frisbee at me? You know, and it gets people together. It gets them out of their, you know, let's just sit and try and have a conversation and break the ice.
Totally.
No, it's like freaking wrestle each other.
Well, maybe I should have tried to wrestle you or throw you a Frisbee when we met at Tonic. We met at an oxygen bar, actually, in Boulder, Colorado. Serendipitously. Yeah, not knowing that we had the same mutual friend, Sarah and Ryan. Oh, I love it. This has just been a gem to hear you talk about all of these important topics and how you see and relate to the world and how you're calling everyone listening to this forward to change up the possibilities by interfacing with their fascia, like getting into these other topics. Like, I know fascia is a huge passion of yours, and it's simple things that activate our mind and our eyes and our hand-eye coordination to tap into our senses that can really have this sort of radical trickle-down effect in other areas of our life and with other people. Like you said, it's about communication, it's about relation and community, and this has just been so great having you on the show, Ben. I'm excited to hear how everyone enjoys this. I'm excited to you talk about play is the best learning environment. Like, I don't know, sitting on this couch right now, I'm kind of feeling the pull to go outside, take our shoes off.
Yeah, go climb some rocks, do something.
Exactly. So maybe we'll just cue the drone to capture that shot as like the end of this podcast, right? Yeah. If we only could, maybe someday.
It's a possibility.
Dude, I want to thank you for one. A couple things I want to honor you for since you honored me was you track well. You have a craft here. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. I'm glad that you have the platform. You're setting up the platform for us to have conversations like this, for you to have these conversations with other experts, bringing them together. And I also want to say that what's really nice and what's really valuable about what you're doing, so I can echo it to your own audience, is that growth mentality. It really is. It's that's the point of a podcast, is to introduce new ideas. Most people I would say that I've met did not have any idea that engaging with your fascia differently could have spiritual implications. But the fact that people are listening to these types of discussions means that it's relevant, means that it's sparking something, you know? And so I want to honor you for allowing the spar mat for minds to come. Yeah. To come on and for us to engage. And the one thing that, you know, I just want to leave us with is, like, the reason why we play is not to find easy. It's not to find easy. It's to challenge. It's to push against those boundaries. So thank you for creating a platform and a playground for these kinds of conversations to even happen in the first place.
100%. I thank you for sharing and appreciating me. And we have very shared interests and we're very aligned, and I'm inspired by your documentary work. That's an area that I'm very interested in getting involved in more on, and in the video sphere, and it's inspiring to see how you've magnified these messages, and just by you reflecting back and appreciating me and the show and what we're creating here, is helping to magnify more people to hear and believe and feel inspired. And that's what it's about, right? Is like find the nuggets of action. You know, as we close here of this episode, again, we'll have all the show notes. We talked about a lot. And so I'll get as many links as I can for where you can pick up some poi, and maybe Ben will do a, maybe we'll do some music video with some poi at some point. That'd be fun, right? Like a hybrid of a music video with athletic exercise. Yes. And some flow exercise. Amen. So we'll have it all linked to the show notes at elevateyourstate.co. Ben, where can people learn more about you? We'll send everyone there, the show notes, your websites. Yes.
Thank you. Man, I would love it if everyone can go over to benjosephstewart.com. It's finally up, still in the works. Soon I will have things like this and options and ideas as far as things that you could purchase that are personalized from me to you. But I also highly encourage people to make their own bags, make their own altars, carry it with them. Remind yourself to do the things you want to do more often. Don't make excuses. Go to benjosephstewart.com. Hit me up at talismanicidols@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll have that email linked in the show notes as well. And yeah, and you can get access. He's got a YouTube channel. We'll link in the show notes as well, because he's got documentaries that are out, and you can keep your those that are interested in the loop on what you're coming out with next, because I know we'll probably have another whole show and interview about your next project here a year from now, if not sooner. Awesome, Ben. Thanks again for being on the show, brother. Yes.
Hello, my friends and fellow health hackers. TJ Anderson here. I wanted to quickly say thank you for joining us today on the Elevate Your State show. I certainly hope you enjoyed it. As a reminder, if you liked today's episode, you can head on over to elevateyourstate.co. That's elevateyourstate.co. And check out the links and show notes that we have for you from today's episode. And if you dig what we're doing here, all about merging health hacking for sustainable high performance, you can also check out our other episodes and or leave a quick review over on iTunes. As you can imagine, these reviews on iTunes really mean a lot for the future of this podcast. So I thank you in advance if you do decide to leave a review. Until next time, my friends, signing off from the beautiful mountains of Boulder, Colorado. Cheers to your next level health and performance.